Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the May 17th edition of the Journal, and we'll start with the first page story. Villagrove School's solar leasing agreement was turned down by Gabriella Agius. During the Villagrove Board of Education meeting on May 15th, the board was met with updates regarding the solar project. QFB Energy notified members that the leasing agreement that was proposed was turned down by the bank. The board will need to update on different options for claiming the tax credit. QFB Energy is waiting for guidance from the Department of Treasury on how to proceed with direct payments for solar for nonprofits. The solar project interconnection agreement and leasing agreement are still in progress, so the district isn't committed to anything at this time. The board is still interested in solar, but the project will be on pause while things are being looked at. The board was visited by faculty about concerns with cell phone usage at school. Callie Parr spoke on the amount of unconsented posting of fellow students, faculty, and staff. The usage has become unmanageable and has caused disruption in the classroom. Confiscation often results in tantrums and rages, even in high school students. Brian Morofsky was next to speak on phone usage, providing examples of disruptions. One student brought their phone into the ACT exam, resulting in their removal and their test being invalidated. Another student utilized their smartwatch during a final exam, looking at a study guide and cheating. The board has not approved changes to the handbook yet, but will vote at a later meeting. Proposed changes on the cell phone usage policies are as follows. Cellular devices need to be off and in students' locker from 8 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. The only exception to this is lunchtime, when high school students are allowed to have their phones. Upon the fourth offense to this policy, the student will have to turn their phone in at the office every morning. Other changes include the combination of elementary, junior, and high school handbooks. This will create a district handbook. Inserts will be added to differentiate between elementary and junior high and high school. Principal Jones also proposed an updated GPA score. This will make class rankings more equitable. Weighted classes will now be worth more than 6 points, unweighted will be worth 4 points, and general classes will be worth 5 points. This will remain on a 5-point scale. Other changes are to be made to the handbook, but will be addressed and approved at a later meeting. The board approved the amended budget for the fiscal year ending June 20, 2023, liability insurance package renewal, and superintendent contract renewal. The board also approved giving authority to the Superintendent Munson to proceed with upgrades to the baseball field. Plans include utilizing a poured concrete wall with pads and netting surrounding the area. Paul's Machinery will donate a crane and labor to assist with the project. 1 month of revenue from the 1% sales tax will cover expenses for this project. The board is projecting the softball field will be done by next summer. For the elementary report, Principal Beck announced that all students that participated in the Special Olympics qualified for the state. Blue Devil Classic will take place on May 18th, as well as Smart Family Night, which provides financial literacy for students. This is sponsored by Indiana State University. Summer tutoring will be from June 5th through July 29th, with a week off for July 4th. Principal Jones reported that the high school band and choir concert was outstanding, as well as the art showcase and honors banquet. $52,392 were given in scholarships. FFA had a successful banquet, and both the junior high track and ACES team were congratulated for their performances at state. Principal Jones asked everyone to keep the Olson family in their prayers as Becky Olson passed away on May 12th. What follows is the obituary for Becky Olson. Rebecca J. Olson, 50, passed peacefully on Friday, May 12, 2023, at her home in Villa Grove. A celebration of Becky's life will be held from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday, May 19, 2023, at Victory Church in Camargo. The memorial service will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 20, 2023, at Victory Church, with Pastor Duane Piercy officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Becky Olson Memorial Fund at the Villa Grove State Bank, which will go toward the Snack Pack program at the Villa Grove High School. Memorial donations may be mailed to the Villa Grove State Bank, 10 North Main Street, Villa Grove, Illinois, 61956. The second story is by Dominic Stallings. VGJH students earn a second in national competition. Villa Grove Junior High student Corey Russell earned second place in a nationwide photography contest run by Jostens. The company provides merchandise for graduation, such as yearbooks, frames for diplomas, class rings, and more. It was super exciting. I didn't think I was going to win, and that it was a big deal. I was just told to enter my photo, said Russell. Russell is an eighth grade student who sometimes helps out in the yearbook class run by Brian Cords. She's been helping out since seventh grade when she started learning how to operate a digital camera. I've always liked photography. On my phone, when me and my mom go flower shopping, I take close-up pictures. It's different on an actual camera, but it's awesome, says Russell. Besides close-up flower photography and yearbook, Corey also likes to take pictures with her friends to keep memories of their joyful moments. I'm definitely the Facebook mom friend of the group. I'm always taking pictures of them and capturing the moment and happy times of the pictures. It says a lot and shows people what you're doing. If I'm off on a field trip, I can show a picture and it makes it feel personal. Corey said she was able to earn second place because of the yearbook teacher, Brian Cords. He's really involved and super helpful anytime the girls need something. He always tries to find something to do. Go take a photo of softball. Email this person. He's always honest about that. That's why the yearbook is so good. We take our time and try, and we love what we do. It's so much fun, said Russell. Cordes said that the yearbook class is usually a high school class, but he also encourages the team to go out and have fun at events as well. During these times, he finds help for middle school. There are a few junior high kids that will step in, and it can be scary to get them out there. She's very talented and has an eye for photography, said Cordes. She's well-rounded, so I'm looking forward to her photography skills, but I also think she has a good eye for design. I think she'll do very well on the business side as well. The yearbook students do all the work in the class. They create the page layout, design, place photos, get stories and information, and even make a YouTube video for the senior class. They work with Adobe Suite, the widespread service for content creation, to create their product. Of course, the yearbook isn't cheap to make. The students work hard to fund the program with concessions and football programs. Cordes said he hopes to make the price more affordable in future years, even with the inflation raising the prices. He said he was glad that the price only went up by $4 this year. Cordes said that the Villa Grove yearbook has received awards in multiple categories in the past and is highly ranked for its school size. He believes his students can perform just as well as other schools. Jonathan Hannaway, Jostens' representative for Central Illinois, presented the second place award to Russell. Hannaway said, "We're very proud of Corey for the incredible artwork and also Brian, who runs an incredible program. I never have to worry about that crew. They always put together a really incredible yearbook." Hannaway added, "The yearbook class can help students get into career with steady need for photographers and other creative artists. One of the best things about being part of the yearbook is not just teaching lessons. It's directly relatable to the workforce," said Hannaway. Russell said she's been thinking about photography as a career in the future, using her skills as a side gig when she goes to college. She gets to know that the photo she took is second to one I will cherish for the most of my life, said Hannaway. And the third main page story, The Cage Moves to a New Location in Tuscola by Dominic Stallings. Locals are able to hone their baseball and softball skills at The Cage, a training facility in Tuscola. The Cage moved from Tolono in Champaign County into Tuscola's downtown area at the beginning of May. They're now located at 125 West South Central in Tuscola. Ryan Tebling, the owner of The Cage, said the building he was leasing in Tolono was sold. Luckily for him, Brett Atkinson reached out to him and showed him the space on South Central. Tabling said he saw the possibilities of the new space, and within a week, he started moving forward with the move. "It's always nerve-wracking to make a move," said Tabling. He's now moved his business twice, and each time he's been worried about losing some of his clients. Every time he does move, coincidentally a little bit further south each time, he finds new ones. He first started out in Champaign 15 years ago with his brother Sean Tabling. They opened up the business in a small warehouse with two cages. They wanted to open a business for their children when they played travel ball. It was basically just finding a way to help find opportunities to help the local programs in the area, said Tabling. Folks have used the Cage's services before. We'll see the same familiar faces: Donna DiBiase, Eddie Al Edwards, Riley Meyer, Andrew Erickson, Aaron Walker, Shelby Martell, and John Fisher are the instructors teaching aspiring players how to play better. Each instructor has experience in playing softball, baseball, or coaching the sport. We have a current clientele which is really loyal to us, and a lot of that is just how good our instructors are. That's how our business has been able to maintain over the years, said Tabling. The number one thing is giving clientele the good instruction and feedback. Instructors can't teach one-on-one in small groups, Tabling said. They also do clinics for fielding, hitting, pitching, pretty much anything baseball or softball related. They're also going to proceed with upgrades to the baseball field. Plans included launch pitching and hitting camp soon, some of which are for a day, others are for multiple weeks. For those wishing for a baseball or softball-themed birthday with a new location, the Cage is able to rent out the space for a celebration. The newest addition to the Cage is a golf simulator. Tabling thought it would be something the community is interested in since the Iron Horse Golf Course is nearby. Business hours for the Cage are currently by appointment. You can make appointments on their website, seeyouatthecage.com. Now we'll move to the obituaries. Christopher Tynan Witter, 80, of Las Cruces, New Mexico, passed away Monday night, April 17, 2023, after a short illness. Service arrangements have been entrusted to the care of Bacchus Funeral Home of Las Cruces and Sunset Crematory, 527-2222, your exclusive provider for veterans and family memorial care. William Bill Henderson of Pearson Station went home to the Lord at 3:45 a.m. Sunday, May 7, 2023, at Jacksonville Memorial Hospital, Jacksonville. Celebration of life services were held Saturday, May 13th at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home. Atwood visitation was forwarded was Saturday at the funeral home. Burial was at the Hammond Cemetery in Hammond. Jean Poorman Johnson, age 99, of Urbana, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, April 18, 2023, at Carl Hospital in Urbana with her family at her side. Memorial service will be held on Monday, May 22nd at 11 a.m. at Schilling Funeral Home in Mattoon with Reverend Jessica LaCrone officiating. Burial will follow at the Humboldt Cemetery. Visitation for family and friends will be held at 10 a.m. prior to the memorial servants. A celebration of life will be held at Clark Lindsay, 101 West Windsor Road, Urbana, and open to all friends on Tuesday, May 22nd at 2 p.m. Eva M. Harshbarger, 97, of Atwood, passed away at 8:53 p.m. Monday, May 8, 2023, at the Tuscola Health Care Center in Tuscola. Funeral services celebrating her life will have Monday, May 15th at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood, with Reverend Eric Quinney Bernard officiating. Burial followed at the Lake Fork Cemetery, rural Atwood. Visitation was held prior to the services at the funeral home. And because May is Military Month, there's another local soldier being honored in the journal. This article is Military Month, U.S. Marine Sergeant Jack Schaefer by Carolyn Cloyd. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fire signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, for those who are cold and are not clothed. The world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, and the hopes of its children. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. That's a quotation from Dwight Eisenhower. Listed under the commander's narrative summary of significant events in the declassified command chronology for the 1st Armored Amphibian Company, 11th Marines, 1st Marine Division, REIN, FMF, for December 1st to December 31st, 1966, is this short statement. A premature burst of 105mm round occurred at 05110, 29th of December, 1966, at the 1st Platoon position at the mouth of the Quaviet River, resulting in 3 KIA and 2 WIA from this company. The incident described in the brief reference listed as a misadventure on the casualty reports, but more commonly known as friendly fire, ultimately claimed the lives of 5 Marines and wounded several others. Killed in the incident were 18-year-old LCPL Thomas Cardiff Jr. of Pennsylvania, 21-year-old Private James Renz of Des Plaines, 18-year-old Dennis Schlott of Baltimore, Maryland, 20-year-old Private First Class Terry Germas of Los Angeles, California, and 25-year-old Sergeant Jack Schaefer of Arcola. Early on the morning of December 29, 1966, on the United States Army of the Republic of Vietnam military base in central Vietnam called Camp Kistler or Seravit Base, due to its location on the mouth of the Seravit River, where it empties into the South China Sea in the Quang province, an artillery mission of harassing fire, a standard practice of random bursts of artillery or small arms meant to create a nuisance and undermine the enemy morale by keeping them on a constant state of alert and increasing stress levels by disturbing their sleep and their movements, was underway against the enemy forces. According to Sergeant William S. Williams, a 30-year Marine Corps veteran who served in the same artillery unit, the harassing fire went on for 24 hours a day. Williams said that on this morning of December 29, 1966, at 5:10 a.m., a short round hit an antenna and exploded over the compound. Marine Sergeant Jack Schaefer had just gone on duty as Sergeant of the Guard when the explosion took place. Jack Schaefer was on guard duty, said Williams. He had just taken my place. If he hadn't taken my place, I would not be here. The round was fired from a 105mm howitzer, a report of casualty list listed as a 155mm, mounted on top of a Marine Amtrak amphibious vehicle, which may have not been properly elevated, causing a low trajectory which allowed the projectile to hit the antenna. 3 Marines sleeping on cots in a general purpose tent, Cardiff, Rince, and Schlott, and two on duty outside the tent, Gemmes and Schaefer, were killed. Jack Leon Schaefer was born in Arcola on March 26, 1941, but little else is known about his earliest years. At about the age of 15, Jack attended a school in Ogden where he belonged to the baseball team and Future Farmers of America. He soon moved to Arcola to live with his foster parents, Robert and Lois King. Jack attended most of his high school years in Arcola, at Arcola High School, his classmates remembering him joining their class around their freshman year. Jack was a member of the AHS football team and the Industrial Arts Club and graduated with the class in 1960. Jack's classmates remember Jack as a fun-loving, happy-go-lucky guy and that he was close friends with classmates Paul McNary Jr. and Harry Bright. Classmate Robert Coombe remembers that he liked to ride around in cars and that he was outgoing. Classmate Jerry Finn recalled Jack was a little bit of a character. He did his share of what young men do at the age of 16, 17, 18 to 19. Finn also remembers Jack had a way with some of the girls, and although he was somewhat of a character, was nothing bad or too ornery, that Jack was a pretty straight shooter. Joe Monahan shared some collective thoughts from the class of 1960 about their classmate Jack Schaefer. He said Jack was well-liked and was an average student. He played football, and he never wanted to be a doctor or a businessman. He always wanted to be a soldier. Jack voluntarily enlisted in the United States Marine Corps in August 1960, shortly after his high school graduation. In August 1966, Joe Monahan crossed paths with Jack playing golf with his mother, Lois King, and they stopped to chat. Knowing Jack had already served one tour of duty in Vietnam, he asked him if he was done with the service, and Jack told him no. Jack told him he was needed and he had to be there to help out. His mother overheard the comment and told him he wasn't going back, that he'd done his duty, but according to Joe Monahan, Jack Schaefer was a patriotic person and he wanted to do all that he could. He wished Jack well, and it was the last time that he ever saw him. "He didn't have to go back," said Monahan. "In the years since, I've come to appreciate the fact that he did it on a voluntary basis. He was a soldier, you know, and the war was on, and he felt that he was needed there, and that's what he could do to contribute, and that's what he did." Monahan also remarked on how much character Jack's actions showed. "He did that of his own volition, and he went back when others wouldn't go." At the time of his death, Sergeant Jack Schaefer was serving as an assault amphibious vehicle crewman with the 1st Platoon, 1st Armored Amphibian Company, 1st Field Artillery Group, 11th Marines, 1st Marine Division, 3rd Marine Amphibious Force. He's remembered by James Capuano, who served with Schaefer and was injured in the incident on December 29, 1966. "I only knew Sergeant Schaefer for 6 months, but all the time I knew, he was a very excellent Marine and a very good man," said Capuano. "His family should be very proud of him. I was only a PFC, and he was one of my sergeants. He taught me everything he knew about the Amtrak and treated me and everyone else as equals, no matter what rank they had achieved." Capuano received shrapnel wounds to his head and right arm and was unconscious when he was evacuated to a hospital in Da Nang. It did not find out about Schaefer's death until his platoon commander told him a few days later, something he said was very depressing. "Such a good man," said Capuano, "and now he's in Jesus' hands forever. But knowing our sergeant, he's teaching him all the Marine Corps way of doing things." Devastated by the loss of their son, Robert and Lois King presented a generous donation to the city of Arcola, which was used to create the Jack Schaefer Memorial Pool at Moore Park in Arcola. The pool no longer exists, but a wall that was built at the entrance to the pool honoring Jack Schaefer is included in the Eisenhower quote above, still graces the site until recently. The Kings, who had no other children, created the Jack Schaefer Education Fund with their estate to provide college scholarships for Arcola High School graduates. Sergeant Jack Schaefer was buried in the National Cemetery of the Pacific at Honolulu, Hawaii, but he's not forgotten. His classmate Robert Coombe and his wife felt compelled to visit the grave while visiting Honolulu, and Sergeant Williams said that he has visited his grave several times. Both Williams and James Capuano said they particularly remember him each year on the anniversary. A capsule containing Sergeant Schaefer's medals, which had been encapsulated within the wall at the entrance of the Jack Schaefer Memorial Pool that his parents built in his memory, was retrieved when the wall was taken down. The capsule was not properly sealed, and his medals have deteriorated. The medals in his grave are all the remains of Sergeant Jack Schaefer, a young man who so wanted to serve his country, except his memory. Let us carry that memory forward. In 1999, Congress designated the month of May as Military Appreciation Month, the month which accumulates Memorial Day, a day in which we honor our military members who have died in service. It's meant to honor the sacrifices made by all the men and women who have served. Yet when trying to express a gratitude to veterans who have experienced combat, we often so often hear the same response. I was just one of the lucky ones. I came home. The ones that never came back, they are the heroes. And so in honor of all of our service members who served in Vietnam, we can tell the story of one of their own, one of their heroes who never made it back. And in doing so, we hope to honor all of them. There's an article titled More State Help Needed to Assist Farmers in Soil Conservation by David Kleinschmidt. After traveling across Illinois with my consulting business, Progressive Agronomy Consulting, I have worked on conservation and nutrient management plans with farmers on all scales. I have seen soil at its unhealthiest and soil at its healthiest. I have seen the power in soil health-focused farming practices, witnessed firsthand soil that is bone dry become rich with microbes that help with living root and soil health practices. With seven people dying and dozens injured when a dust cloud enveloped Interstate 55 south of Springfield and made international news, there have been a lot of people commenting about the need to do something to ensure this doesn't happen again. But this isn't unprecedented. The Dust Bowl occurred nearly 100 years ago when the topsoil was left loose without anything to hold it in place. Strong winds picked up the soil and blew it across the Great Plains all the way to the East Coast. The month of April in central Illinois was drier and much windier than normal. With normal rain events, this incident might never have occurred, but only masked the underlying cause. Farmers need support from leaders at the state level to implement conservation practices to help keep more tragic accidents from occurring. Legislation now in the Illinois House, Senate Bill 1701, the Partners for Conservation Reauthorization Act, has a focus on soil health and providing funds for conservation farming practices and education. The bill could have helped provide support to farmers to ensure that we keep our most valuable resource, the soil, in place. In Illinois, we lose nearly 5 tons of topsoil per acre per year on average. Much of that erosion is from rain, not wind. It's not as apparent because it falls from the sky and is less visible, but nearly every lake and reservoir in the state deals with sedimentation from agricultural land that carries with it soil nutrients like phosphorus that cause algal blooms in the middle of the summer, or nitrates that can cause blue baby syndrome and other illnesses. The sedimentation forces municipalities to use more chemicals to treat the drinking water or spend millions of dollars on reverse osmosis systems. All this cost gets passed down to everyone using the water. Through my work, I have learned directly from the farmers I serve that there is a desired need for more outreach program, peer-to-peer mentor groups, and education on how to manage conservation practices, like cover crops and strip-till, another tool in the toolbox. Sometimes the cost of the cover crops and the risk of unknown keeps farmers from trying new practices. The truth about erosion is that it's a biological process in the soil, specifically the lack of biological processes or stable aggregates. These are the lumps and clumps of soil glued together. Without the glue to hold the soil together, Illinois soil is susceptible to wind and water erosion. I believe that the tenets of soil health outlined by the Natural Resources Conservation Service can help solve this problem. 1. Keep the soil covered as much as possible with residues. 2. Minimize physical, chemical, and biological disturbances. 3. Keep a living root in the soil as much as possible. 4. Add more plant diversity. But farmers need support through education, technical assistance, and funding in order to adopt these soil health practices. Often farmers feel like they're on an island if they're doing something different than their neighboring farmers and feel like they can't talk about what they're doing with them, even though the neighbor may be curious about the practice. Peer groups have worked incredibly well for some projects. I have been part of in Kansas to get a greater adoption rate with a greater degree of success. I support SB 1701 as it provides resources for peer-to-peer education and resources for farmers who are considering adopting soil health systems to their farming operations. Farmers can be their own greatest support group when adopting new farming practices. I urge you to join me in calling on our elected officials to pass this bipartisan bill. A story out of Springfield, Rose's bill to change rules for prescription pickup is headed to Governor Pritzker. Illinois is another step closer to ending an outdated practice that made it difficult, if not impossible, for many people to pick up their prescriptions, said State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet. The Illinois General Assembly has passed legislation filed by Rose that would end what he calls a ridiculous rule that requires pharmacists to be present when people pick up their prescription, even if it's already filled, packaged, and signed off by a licensed staff. I think everyone at some point has gone to their drugstore to pick up a prescription that they were told was ready, but they were turned away because the pharmacist is out and no one else in the store is allowed by law to make the sale, said Rose. That's a major issue for people who work night shifts, have children, or simply have to work late. Because of the rules and a statewide shortage of pharmacists, many pharmacies have cut back on their hours, leaving many patients without access to their potentially life-saving medicines, Rose said. This issue is especially problematic in rural areas. Rose's legislation, Senate Bill 1889, would allow cash register clerks and other store employees to go ahead and process the sale of prescriptions that have been filled, packaged, and sealed by a pharmacist, even if the licensed pharmacist is gone for the day. This is about access to care for many people. Children shouldn't go without life-saving insulin or asthma medicine because their parent had to go to work late. People shouldn't go without their heart medicines. No one should be without their prescription because of arcane and arbitrary government red tape, said Senator Rose. Rose's bill, Senate Bill 1889, has passed both the Illinois Senate and the House and now awaits action by governor. Tuscola Trust Bank travels throughout county for Small Business Blitz by Dominic Stallings. Tuscola Trust Bank visited 68 businesses across Douglas County for their Small Business Blitz. Tuscola Branch Market President Jason Freeman and Branch Manager Kim Martin said the Blitz was their way of saying thank you to the Douglas County community. Associates from the bank gave out tote bags with Trust Bank merchandise and brochures outlining new and improved services. The Small Business Blitz has been the bank's first foray into event marketing in Douglas County. Previously, Trust Bank has been active in the community with donations. Freeman recently presented a $500 check to veterans at Operation Honor the Guard during their May 10th event at the Savemore parking lot. A Small Business Blitz was planned around last week's Small Business Appreciation Week. Freeman said they wanted to get out to these businesses to offer them resources so they can leverage their benefit. Part of the trip is educational side, whether it's in investments, checking, moving money, fees. We want to be the expert one-stop shop that you can stop in and have a conversation with, said Freeman. Freeman said the Trust Bank now offers a new credit card processing service. It's something that runs in the background and you don't think about the fees, you just pay them, said Martin. Freeman said that with a checking account, they could do an analysis of fees paid and cut out unnecessary ones. Martin added that their business merchant service businesses have someone they can call and talk to locally. It's a great time to sit down and have a conversation with a bank and banker that understands newer concept and has those capabilities and shares them with the community, said Freeman. Only Trust Bank merged with TNB Bank on March 14, 2022, forming Trust Bank Tuscola. When the merger was announced, former TNB Bank President Lloyd Murphy said the merger would present more opportunities for the community as well as more products and services for the customers. Hershberger chosen for Rotary Student of the Month of May. Mackenzie Hershberger was chosen to be the Rotary Student of the Month of May. She earned this recognition by participating in various sports, clubs, and other activities. She started off her freshman year strong by participating in FCA, Key Club, Cross Country, Track and Field, Cheerleading, and also the Drama Club. She also played a part of the Addams Family Musical. Hershberger focused most of her time on cross country, cheerleading, and the FCA. In her junior year, she became a member of SAD, Key Club, NHS Drama Club, Cross Country, Cheerleading, and the Clue Play. She also helped with the musical that year as well. During her senior year, Hershberger has participated in SADD, Key Club, Cross Country, Cheerleading, NHS Track, and Field and FCA. Congratulations, Mackenzie. And that's about all the time we have this week for the Journal. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you next week.